Welcome, everybody, to the Grueling Truce March Madness special. We're going to preview the Final Four today. I want to remind you, if you're going to bet on the game, go to BetMGM. It's the best place for betting on college basketball, especially this weekend's Final Four or the women's Final Four, which we will have a preview show tomorrow at noon for. You can click on the link in the description down below in the video if you're watching on YouTube. We're going to go ahead and we're going to get started. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster, here with our special guest, Dr. Jay Gee. How you doing, Dr. J? There you go. Joe Spillman loves to call you Dr. J, so we'll just call you Dr. J.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and if we're having any technical difficulties where his picture's froze, you can still see him. It's a little creepy at times, Jim, if you're just sitting there not moving, but we'll go ahead. We'll go with it. But March Madness, Final Four, huge final weekend for basketball. I mean, yep. Indiana State's drawing a million viewers for the NIT. The Iowa women's game against LSU drew 12 million. We've got the men's and women's Final Four. Indiana Seton Hall tomorrow night, the NIT championship. This is a great weekend for basketball. And when we look at this Final Four, Jim, we see two huge favorites. Should they be that big of favorites?
I took a look at this, and I like NC State plus 8.5. We all know they were 17-14. They've won 9 games in a row. So whatever it was the problem they figured out as a team. That during that 9-game streak, they've beaten Marquette, North Carolina, and Duke twice. The team that's playing now, NC State, if they played NC State of 6 or 7 weeks ago, they'd beat them by 15. So they're playing with house money, so to speak. And I like them plus 8.5.
What do you think about UConn and Alabama?
Yeah, I would take UConn minus 11.5 against almost any team. They're winning by more than that on average. They're the best team. If they don't win the national championship, it'll be a little surprising. It's only a 1-game deal. It's not 4 out of 7 or something. So strange things happen in sports. But I really like UConn against anybody. Alabama is the number one scoring offense during the regular season in all of college basketball, but they were almost last in scoring defense. Only 5 teams allowed more points per game. And so that's a combination I don't think works against UConn. I like UConn minus 11.5.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the thing that sticks me out about Alabama is I think there is a path for the upset, because if you look at the last loss that UConn had, it was to the Creighton Blue Jays. They lost 85-66. Creighton won the game because they hit 14 three-point shots. You've got Alabama with Mark Sears. They can get hot from three-point range, but they're going to have to hit 14 to 23s to win this game, because I think UConn's going to dominate the boards, and they've got Klingon, who is one of, if not the best big man. It's him and Zach Edey, which would be a great matchup for Monday night's game if it was to happen. But outside of if they come out and hit 15 out of 25 threes, I think they've got a chance. I don't see how that's possible against UConn right now, because there are outliers during the season where a couple teams did do that. But overall, you got to think UConn's going to be locked in. They're not going to overlook anything. And this is a team that has led all 4 tournament games at some point or another by 30 points or more.
Right. No one's getting close. Illinois wins the Big Ten, and they get blown out against UConn. UConn has won 10 consecutive tournament games by double digits in all of them. And like you said, there are points in the game where they're so far ahead that it's hard to even stay focused, to keep a sense of urgency. And so that's why sometimes the games relax back into a closer game. But by closer, that's air quotes. It's not close when UConn plays people.
Yeah, and the scary thing is, against Illinois, I mean, that was a game Illinois could have had the lead at halftime. But at 23-23, to watch them go on a 30-0 run, you don't see a team do that against a team like Illinois. Illinois is a team with DeMosk, Terrence Shannon. Those guys can score against anybody. But Illinois held them to 3 of 17 from three-point range, and they still lost by a lot, 20 points or so, and the game didn't seem that close. It actually seemed like UConn was toying with a JV boys team.
Right, and I think that's going to be the problem for Bama. They're coming up against a team that is clearly the best. Alabama's scoring defense is not good. And it's like you said, if they can come out and hit shots, I've played against teams that aren't missing, and you will not win that game. But that's what has to happen for Alabama to win or to get within 11.5 even. is they have to come out and knock down a 50 to 55% of their three-point shots.
Yeah, and the other thing is this. Bama doesn't shoot free throws as good as UConn. I don't think either. At least they have it in a tournament. And we saw Bama battle back from 13 down against Clemson to win that game by, what, 7 or 8 points. So Alabama, to me, is a team that you talked about the defense. And I think that defense, we have seen them kick it up a little bit once we got to the tournament. But they had like 4 games where they gave up 100 points to teams. And I don't see how you can beat UConn that way. And I agree. If I'm going to go to bet MGM and I'm going to bet this game, I'm going to give the 11.5 points. And I think Alabama is an extremely well-coached team. Yes. I think they're a very good team. Yes. They're just not on the same level. And UConn, they're not real deep. But the other thing UConn has added is they've had 2 guys that have stepped up as of late that have made them 8 deep, because really during the regular season, there was like 1 guy off the bench, maybe 2 max.
Right. That's the perfect time to do it too, is to get deep when you go into the tournament, because you want to be able to play 7 guys at least. If you can get to your 8th, that's great. But Bama can do it. You know, Villanova beat Georgetown, and so I think that Bama can beat UConn, but it will take their A game. They, even if they play a B or B-plus game, they're going to lose by double digits, and that's what the spread is right now.
Yeah, because UConn is just a dominant team. You've got Donovan Klingon, who, I mean, he did have some parts of the season that he missed because of injuries, and really injuries kept this team from possibly being undefeated right now, because you had 2 or 3 different guys that were missing at different parts of the season where they weren't a full team. Because really, when I watch these guys, Jim, I haven't seen a team this dominant in college basketball since UNLV in 1990 and 91. Right. But the key there is, in 1991, Duke got hot and actually knocked off UNLV in the national semifinal.
Right. And I don't think this Bama team is as good as that Duke team. I think that's an easy statement to make.
No, there's no Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley, and Christian Laettner on Alabama.
Nope, there's not. Those are Hall of Fame, college Hall of Fame kind of guys, and I don't think that Bama has that. I like Sears. He's a terrific guard, and he shoots very nice percentages. He's a 50-40-85 guy. So if they are winning, you get the ball into his hands and let him shoot the free throws at the end of the game. But I think it's going to be the other way around. I think that you're going to see Cam Spencer, if the game's close and UConn is up, he'll have the ball. He goes to the line. He makes more than 90% of his free throws. He's not the guy you're going to foul and to try to get back into the game if you're down by 5 or 6 late. So Bama could cover the spread, but the idea that they'll win this game seems a long shot, which is why I think the spread is what it is.
Yeah, because I think the only chance you get is to jump UConn quick, get up 10 to 12 points, and then basically hold on for dear life. And that's about the only way you can do this, because this UConn team is very good. Now, that brings us to a game I agree on you with. NC State-Purdue, right now, according to what sportsbook you go, has Purdue favored by either 8.5 or 9.5. I know I made a lot of money last weekend betting NC State straight up at, you know, I think it was plus 260 against Duke, which I think this team is being undervalued. They're playing as well as anybody in the country. And this is exactly like the 1983 NC State team with Jim Valvano that made the run, because I think they were like 17 and 14 in the regular season. They got hot. They beat Duke, North Carolina, Virginia in the ACC playoffs. And then they made to the NCAA tournament. And then they struggled to beat Pepperdine and UNLV. They blew out Utah. And then they get an Elite Eight shot against Virginia and Ralph Sampson again, beat them at the buzzer. And when they get to the Final Four, the Houston Cougars in 1983, especially off the way they beat Louisville in that national semifinal, they looked unbeatable too. And it didn't look like it was possible anybody could beat them. Now, this NC State team, there was nobody on that NC State team in 1983 like DJ Burns. And DJ Burns against Zach Edey is a very interesting matchup, because I don't see how Burns can defend Edey. But I don't think Edey has played a big man with the type of moves and the type of inside game that DJ Burns has either.
Right, and he's left-handed, and that does change how you play defense a little bit. I remember as a guard facing a guy, and you want to force people to their left, but if he's left-handed, you have to switch that in your mind, and so that'll make a difference. The other thing is, when I was looking into this, DJ Burns, they got him listed at 6'9 and 275. I think he's probably a little bigger than that, but – he's durable. He played 42 minutes in the Oakland game. He played 29 minutes against Duke. This is not a guy where his size is a detriment, where he only plays 23 or 24 minutes. He can go a long way. And I think that that will cause Zach as many problems as anything else. The other thing is Edie is not shooting free throws well. The entire Purdue team is only making 68% of their free throws. So if this comes down to free throws toward the end of the game, they're going to want to get it to maybe Lawyer and Gillis. Those are your free throw shooters at Purdue. But if it's going into Zach's though, I'd put him on the line and make him hit those free throws. He missed 8 or 9 free throws in the last game. And if the game's close, that's enough that you can lose. And so this is intriguing. I agree. I think that the two DJs there at NC State are playing the best they've played all year. The team is, and the team that was 17-14 is a distant memory. That's not the same team as what we're looking at right now. So I'm interested to see how it turns out.
Yes, and they've also got 6'10 forward Muhammad Dara. I'm probably saying his name wrong, but I'm not very good at forward names. But he's got 5 double-doubles over his last 7 games. And the two of those combined, you talk about being able to foul Edie a little bit. If you could kind of split those fouls out between 2 or 3 guys, put him on the line, I think that's big. And the other thing that's big to me is this. Purdue against Gonzaga, you had other guys step up who played well outside of Edie. This last game, it almost seemed like Purdue was back to throw the ball to Edie and kind of just watch him play. I don't think he got as much help. If they're going to beat NC State, this can't be just Zach Edie.
Right, because of they've got 3 guys that are 6'10". Well, if you throw in Horn, they've got or DJ Burns, I should say, they've got 4 guys that are 6'9", and they're not anything the size of Edie. But they can cause him problems, like you said, spread out the fouls, put him on the line. I'd make him shoot 14 or 16 free throws. I would. Otherwise, if you let
him. Hey, the way the officials work with Zach Edey, you don't have to allow him to. That's how many he's going to get.
Yeah, he's going to get that. I wonder if they'll call 3 seconds on him more often. He's able to get in there and spend about 4
Have they ever called 3 seconds on Zach Edey, Jim?
I don't know that I've seen it. So, you know, he's reigning player of the year. He's odds on to win it again. There's of course TV money wrapped up in all this, and so that'll make a difference. But any Final Four, it seems there's always storylines that are just so interesting about how did a team, you know, because when Bama got in as an at-large, I was kind of scratching my head. I'm going, they had 2 quality wins. They beat Auburn. 2 weeks later, they lost to Auburn by 20. They beat Florida. They played Florida 2 more times, lost both those games by 15. They don't have any other wins against ranked teams.
They beat Indiana State when Robbie Avila was hurt at the start of the year.
Yeah, but I don't think Indiana State was ranked at the time.
At the time, they weren't. Later on, okay. They were. But I'm just saying, I mean, Alabama deserves to be there. They've got an excellent basketball coach. You're just not on the same level as UConn. Nobody is. But you can always have Sears go off, hit 10 threes, and before you know it, you know, you pull an Oakland, Kentucky, where you had one guy go off, hits a bunch of threes, and you stay in the game, and you win it. The only thing about it is this, though. UConn is a pretty experienced team. They won a national championship last year. Mm-hmm. They're very well coached. So it's not going to be like Kentucky panicking at the end of a close game. I mean, you're going to have to flat out beat UConn. UConn's not going to beat itself.
It seems that way. The only thing crosses my mind is that they haven't been in close games at the end. You get to 4 minutes left in their games, it's essentially a done deal. If there are 4 minutes left and they're down by 1, they could tighten up a little bit. Now, you're right that they are extremely experienced and they've got good coaching, but they won't have been in that kind of a situation. And at that point, then Bama will, of course, believe we can win this. I think you'll see the first probably 4 to 6 minutes of the second half will really tell the story whether Bama can make this into a 40-minute game, or whether it's just going to be the last 8 or 10 minutes where we're looking forward till Monday.
Yeah, and I really think the first 10 minutes are going to tell us how this game's going to go. Alabama has to have a hot start, because if they fall behind 6 to 8 points, they're dead in the water.
Yeah, it won't be good for them, that's for sure. So a couple of great matchups. I'm really looking forward to it.
And really, the NC State-Purdue game, you have to worry psychologically just because of all the failures from Purdue from 1981 all the way to now. That has to weigh on you a little bit. And I mean, I think you could see it with their crowd in the stands during that game. I mean, every one of them looked like they were about to stroke out because, and I understand that because I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan where no matter how good everything goes, you just expect something bad to happen at the end. And do you think NC State beats Purdue or do you just like them to cover?
I like Purdue by 4 to 6 points. I think NC State covers, but I think Purdue wins.
Okay. I could see that, but I can tell you this. I think if it's that close, I think NC State gives them, but I'm not saying it will be, but I would take the points. And I really think there's a good shot at NC State because we also know every time there's a Final Four, there's a matchup we expect to see in that championship game, which would be Edie against Klingon right now. And it almost never comes to fruition.
True. Very true. And then in the UConn-Bama game, I like UConn to win and to cover, to win by something like 15 or 16 points probably, and a high score. 95, 98 kind of points for UConn.
Yeah, because I think my predicted score for my article will be 96 to 80. I think it's something where the game will look worse than that, though. But I think you will get some garbage time threes at the end that will make the game look more competitive than
what's the over-under in that game, Mike?
UConn, Alabama? Yes. Hold on. I got to pull up my BetMGM app, and then I'll let you know. And you can click on the link in the description down below if you're watching on YouTube to get the BetMGM app to check that out. The other thing that's interesting is I just wrote an article on the odds for the most outstanding player of the tournament. And I know when I was growing up, you were growing up 70s, 80s, 60s. A lot of times they would give it to whoever had played the best in that tournament. Now it's turned more into a Super Bowl MVP who was the best player in the Final Four. Right. But the odds right now favor Zach Edey to be the most outstanding, to be named the most outstanding player of the tournament.
Yeah, even if they lose and he only plays five games instead of six, I can see that. 30 points and 16 rebounds a game is legendary stuff. It really is.
Well, I don't think you can get it unless you're in the championship game. That's just me, though. I mean, you're only playing one game. The other one played an extra game. The over-under is... I wish my eyesight wasn't so
160?
Bad. 160.5.
160 and a half?
Yeah.
Oh, they go past that.
Yeah, I think I would bet that over all day.
Yeah, that's...
The only thing that worries me, oh, UConn's defense is so good. If Bama comes out and they don't hit early, I could see this game being like 88 to 56, and you don't even get close to the point spread or the over-under.
Yeah, you could see that, but Bama can score. They've been able to... Even when they lose game, you know, they lost to Kentucky... I think they like 117 to 95, but they scored 95 points in the game.
Yeah.
Even when they lose, they have a tendency to put the point.
But Kentucky's defense is not that great. It's a lot easier to score 95 on them. Now, the other interesting bet I have here is the straight up bet NC State. If you bet them to beat Purdue, you get plus 340. So plus 340 is a pretty big number in this game, I think, because I don't think the game is as big a mismatch as a lot of people think it is.
I don't either. I would have 3 weeks ago. I would have, if somebody said, hey, Purdue's going to play NC State in the tournament, I would have thought, well, it's going to be a walk. But I don't think that now. I think this is going to be a good game and it'll go 40 minutes. I'm looking forward to it.
And if you want Bama to straight up win, they're like plus 600 right now.
I still don't think I'd take that bet.
No, but I mean, you could throw $50 on NC State and, you know, pick $170 all if they win the game. And I think there is a good chance of that. And also, Steve Risley will join us probably Monday for a championship preview show. He was supposed to be on here today, but he had a few personal things he had to take care of. And of course, Steve likes to tell everybody he combined for 26 points in the 1981 national championship game with Isaiah Thomas to beat North Carolina. But Steve just had 5 of the points. But it is true. It was combined for 26. All right, so Jim, what's your big takeaway from this NCAA tournament? What's the thing you'll remember most about this? For me, it's Oakland beating Kentucky because, number one, I hate Kentucky. And number two, I actually made a fair amount of money off Oakland winning that game.
For me, it was between 30 million and 40 million brackets filled out on ESPN, and everyone was busted by the end of the first round. Nobody got all 32 games correct. And it was largely the SEC.
That's usually how it goes.
When Yale beat Auburn and Oakland beat Kentucky, those two games in particular destroyed the brackets. And usually you see some people a number of brackets even get to the Sweet 16. They kind of pick a few of the upsets, but the upsets were so outrageous to see Oakland beat Kentucky as an example. And Auburn had just caught fire, won the SEC, and they lose to Yale, which is, that's a surprising loss. It really is. And so that's one of the things that for me, it kind of, it didn't really throw it wide open. It just thinned out some of the pretenders, and it made it so that.
And there weren't as many upsets as there usually are in that first round either.
No, just a handful. And they, you know, I guess yeah. that, you know, NC State was an 11 and they beat, was it Texas Tech was a 6? Is that who they beat in that first round?
Yeah, in the first round, yeah.
And so that's a bit of an upset, although if you're the ACC champ, you should win your first round game, you'd figure. But it's that was the thing for me. I could not believe that there were no brackets that were good still after just one round, and that's pretty rare.
Hey, mine's still good. I got three of my final four in. So yeah, I missed on NC State.
Yeah, I get UConn and Purdue, and didn't have Bama. Didn't have.
I had UConn, Alabama, Purdue, with UConn beating Purdue in the national championship
game. Interesting.
So. Unfortunately, I didn't submit it for any money because I start writing all the articles and stuff and usually forget to submit my bracket on time anyways, but it is what it is. We're going to talk NCAA women's basketball Final Four tomorrow, which, I mean, I don't remember an NC Final Four weekend where the NIT turns into such a big deal and the NCAA women's tournament turns into such a big deal. In the NCAA women's tournament, I mean, if you've got Caitlin Clark against South Carolina in a national championship game, that might do better TV ratings than whoever plays Monday night for the men's championship.
It could. It very well could, especially if you had something like, you know, an Alabama NC State or Alabama against Purdue kind of a matchup. You know, if UConn.
Yeah, like last year's UConn San Diego State. Yeah.
Right.
Only I think UConn Purdue, I think, would do big numbers. UConn NC State might. I think Purdue Alabama, if you trick Alabama fans into thinking it's a football game, they may accidentally watch the start of it.
Right.
But I think Nate Oates has proved he's one of the best coaches in the country. To go to Alabama and do what he's done. Right. I mean, Alabama has always had a decent basketball program. I mean, they're probably best known for the 80s with Wimp Sanderson. And the crazy ass jackets he used to wear. But to get Alabama to this point in a Final Four, I mean, if he stays at Alabama, I mean, they could be a powerhouse in football and basketball, which we don't see hardly any programs do.
Right. It's impressive. First trip ever to the Final Four for Alabama. And, you know, if Tennessee had won their Elite Eight game, they would have also been in the Final Four for the first time. So it's. There were some great storylines, and that's one of the reasons that people love March Madness is these things happen where you have unexpected arrivals into the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, and the Final Four on pretty much an every year basis. In the men's side, the ladies' side, not as much. You typically have the ones, twos, threes, and fours playing.
You are starting to get a few more upsets, though, in the women's tournament. Like, there used to never be a chance of a 14 beating a three. In the last few years, it has happened a couple times. And really, you've got a team in South Carolina that's been as dominant as UConn has. And I think that's what makes that so interesting. I think if you get South Carolina against Caitlin Clark, we'll see what happens. I mean, really, it's similar to, you know, Larry versus Magic. The only problem is there's just a Larry here and there's really no Magic with South Carolina. But I think that would be a huge game. I just want to know why they played a women's championship game at 3:00 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know. It's on the weekend, so people will be, they won't be at work. But if they put it up against the men's game, it would the ratings.
Yeah, but if you put it up Sunday night at 7 or 8 o'clock, I think it would do even bigger numbers.
Yeah, it's quite probable.
I mean, hell, they had over 12 million viewers there, and I think last year's national championship game for the men was only like 9 or 10 million. So right. You topped that number also, and. I was one of those people that fell asleep about halfway during the game because you knew who was going to win the game once you watched the first 5 to 10 minutes because UConn was so dominant. And I think that UConn, I mean, in the last 25 years, UConn has the top college basketball program in the country. you could go men's and women's combined. They have the best program. I mean, UConn's women are going to the Final Four again, and they've won I don't know how many national championships. You know, UConn's won six since 1999 if they win this next one. And that's impressive, and that far outpaces the Connecticuts, the Kansases, the Indianas, and the Dukes of the last 25, 26 years.
Yeah, I think that the ladies have won, if I remember correctly, 11 national championships. And last year, when they didn't make it to the Final Four, it was 14 consecutive trips to the Final Four that was snapped. And now they're back again this time. So what Geno has done there is beyond remarkable. They need to make a sports movie about it, quite frankly, because you can argue that he's the best team coach. Wait a second.
We got to argue this. He coaches women. He plays against women. The competition is not there. To me, this would be like comparing John Wooden in a 20-man or 25-team field, winning it every year at UCLA in the 60s and 70s, because I think what we are seeing with more upsets is I think this is evolving to where the women's game right now is where the men's game probably was in the mid-70s, where your Final Fours, you'd have an outlier here or there, but you had kind of the same teams every year. So I do think women's college basketball is picking up big time, and you can tell that just from the upsets. But with Geno Auriemma, I mean, he should have went and coached men if he wanted to show he was the best. Was that misogynistic, Jim? I'm sorry.
No, I'm listening. I just think that what he's done there, because of the 11 national championships, I think there were six seasons or seven where they were undefeated, including back-to-back years they were undefeated. There's at least two three-peats in there. And he's getting a complete team changeover every four seasons. And he's been there. They won their first title in 95. So he's been there 30 years.
Yeah, but he's always gotten the best players, and the player pool is not that deep. It's kind of UCLA with, you know, Sam Gilbert buying players for John Wooden. I mean, it was hard not to win a lot. And Geno Auriemma, I'm not saying bought players. He just had the best program. And the thing was, he took that mantle from Pat Summitt at Tennessee. Right. So really, they're the pioneers of women's college basketball. And what Pat Summitt did, she was like the female Bobby Knight. What Geno Auriemma's done, and I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm just saying, yeah, I don't think you can compare him to men. It's kind of like comparing Caitlin Clark to Pistol Pete Maravich. It doesn't work for me.
Right. It's, well, man, part of that is because in the men's game, you a truly great player is only going to be on the team 1 year. Whereas in the ladies' team, you'll get them for three or four.
Which makes it easier, though.
Yep.
And also, the men's game wasn't like that until the last few years where they mandated guys couldn't go to the NBA, which I think is absolute horse crap. Because I think if you're 18 years old and you go get drafted in the first round of the NBA and you can make $20 million guaranteed, how are you going to tell me I can't do that, that I got to go to school for a year? Because if you're telling me I got to go to school for a year, I'm only going for a year, so I'm not going to get a degree. So that also makes it a real misnomer to call these guys student athletes.
Right. And in football, you have to be 3 years out of high school.
Well, yeah, I think you have to be a certain age. I think it's like 20 or 21. But football's different because football, physically, if you're an 18-year-old and you got to go in and maybe play a 28-year-old man and you're hitting each other, I think it's a little bit different than playing basketball. And I think that rule is there more for the safety than anything else. But I think that is the big difference between the football and the basketball. I just don't think an 18-year-old young man coming out of high school is ready to go in and, you know, try to block one of these stud 330-pounders that, you know, have a wife, three kids, and, you know, they're 30 years old. I think that's kind of an issue. Basketball, I don't think that issue is a safety thing, because we've seen plenty of guys come into college basketball, you know, right away, and we're great players. You know, Moses Malone, LeBron James, there's all kind of guys that came with no high school and jumped right into the NBA and played. I think it would be hard-pressed to find a kid to go straight from playing high school football to playing in the NFL.
Would be tougher, for sure.
Yeah. But, all right, so James, you've got the championship game being Purdue versus UConn.
Correct. And I like UConn.
All right, but you can't like him yet. You got to save some intrigue for Monday's show.
I like him.
You can't just jump on it. Damn, Jim, come on. Shit, I'm not going to call you Dr. J at all if you're going to say stuff like that. You can't look ahead like that. So I think it's going to be this. I think NC State pulls the upset. I think NC State versus UConn. I'm not going to tell you who I think is going to win on Monday because, number one, you picked that, Jim. Well, what if Klingon gets hurt and he can't play Monday night? I won't let you change your pick because you said it, and I'll run it on loop, you saying that they were going to win.
That's all right. He'll be all right.
All right, Jim, you got a Twitter?
I do not. That was my IT person, who also is known as my girlfriend, has been out of town, and she gets back tomorrow morning, and so I will have one before we do the ladies' Final Four preview tomorrow. I will have a Twitter, or an X.
All right, and we will be back tomorrow to preview the NCAA Women's Final Four at noon. That's what, Thursday? So I think their Final Four games run Friday night. And then Friday, you can check Survive Advance with me and Steve Risley. We're going to have a special guest from a 1980 Purdue team that went to the Final Four. Make sure you keep an eye out for that. At least Steve said he was going to. Sometimes people don't answer when Steve calls, but we'll see what happens. Make sure you follow me on X, @GruelingTruth. Make sure you check out BetMGM, the top sports book for betting on all sports, especially the Final Four this weekend, though. So for Dr. Jim, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been watching and listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends